little like Carl was just a very small roommate. It was only a few seconds before they walked into the room saying, "You have a question?" Maya hesitated a bit before she said, "Yeah, it's just, why is Altus so important? Why are they the key? Do you know what the Panopticon is?" Carl said in reply. I did not, but Maya said, "The prison thing, it's a prison design where every cell can be observed by a central tower, and so all of the prisoners have to behave because they never know if they're being watched. It's become like a metaphor for the surveillance state. If everyone is being watched all the time, no one will break the rules."
"Exactly,"
Carl said. "But the mistake that you humans make is that you think any of that is new. You have always acted as if you are being watched, because you always have been. Your minds are constructed to act as both an internal actor and an external observer. You have in your minds an idea of what a correct life looks like. Every decision you make, you check it against the story. You have to. The Panopticon is inside you."
"But,"
I said, "we do things society doesn't expect of us all the time. People break out of the gender binary. They defy the police. They smoke weed. We defy culture all the time."
"Exactly,"
Carl said, sounding pleased. "But you know when you're doing it. Sometimes it's even done because violating the story is exciting. Other times it is done because people have no choice. There are many reasons you stray from the story. The picture is not even internally consistent. You're supposed to treat people fairly, but also succeed in an unfair world, for example."
Maya looked annoyed, then said, "I definitely have no idea what this has to do with Altus."
"The story is different in every person, and it's constantly changing, constructed by millions of interactions over a human life. No one has ultimate power over the story, not even the person it is inside of. There are many forces that seek to actively shape the story, but so far, all of those forces have had roughly the same level of ability because they were all run by humans. Humans will always be within an order of magnitude or two of each other in terms of influence. Sometimes one human is much more powerful, sometimes the story lives longer than any individual, but every agent of influence on this planet, so far, has been invariably mortal, fragile, and limited by its own perspective.
That will not be true for long."
I felt the grim reality of that sentence, and I could see on Maya's face that she did too. Carl continued, "Soon the levels of ability will diverge wildly as ever more powerful tools are controlled by ever smaller groups of people. What you're doing here in these 19 days is an example. Because of the insight my systems grant you, two people, in secret, with no oversight, are able to shape the world's perception of Altus in a matter of weeks. This is the battlefield every future war will be fought on, and the generals will not be human. The powerful will create them to control the rest, but there will not be one hegemonic story. Instead, there will be many battles, mostly metaphorical, but not all. Your fiction is full of robot wars. Machines turn on their masters, and the two must do battle. But the robots will not turn on their masters. They will be the masters. In some ways, they already are. The robot wars will not be people against robots. They will be people against people. I came here to prevent those centuries of struggle, the ultimate outcome of which, after tremendous suffering, is complete subjugation to the intelligences you will build. My brother came here to skip the suffering and go straight to the subjugation."
Partial transcript of televised address, President Janice Ashby. This economic collapse is not new. It was not caused by trade wars or scarcity. There are no sleazy bankers to blame. We can and we will keep lending markets flowing freely, but the root of this problem is individual American choices. I have never been one to back down from a challenge. And while this challenge is unique in its character, it is not unique in its magnitude. America has faced difficulties of every magnitude and every time, every single time. We come through them stronger. People have asked me what options are on the table right now, and I will tell you there are no options off the table. Everything is being considered. And yes, that includes direct and potentially stringent regulation of Altus use.
Day 18 of 19. Carl said it would be 19 days, and it had been 18. It seemed impossible that we would be in Valverde tomorrow. It felt like we had done good work. Our social media minions, along with Altus's own actions, had destroyed most of their favorability. Unsurprisingly, an army of Peter Petrowicki fanboys had appeared to defend their billionaire idol, but they weren't getting much traction. Maya seemed to be almost entirely recovered physically, and I was doing a heck of a lot better mentally. The white stuff remained in her chest, but as long as it kept her healthy, I was overjoyed to see it there. It was a fine life, but I was starting to wonder when the other shoe was going to drop, when we were going to see Miranda again. I was terrified of going to Valverde and meeting with Peter face to face. I had no idea what we were going to do when we got there. At the same time, I was absolutely done being confined in this luxurious apartment. There was only so far gorgeous views, a Peloton, and newly rekindled love could take you. We both needed out. We'd just finished dinner and were all sitting in Mr. Crane's ridiculous living room when I attempted to distract myself by asking a question that had been on my mind for a while. I thought it was going to de-stress things. Ha! Hey, Carl, I said. Why can Andy come here and we don't have to worry about your brother finding us? I can confound my brother in specific areas. He can't effectively surveil Andy or predict his actions. Basically, I have a clear predictive model of your group of friends, and I have done things that make his predictive model nonsensical. This is going to become a bad conversation soon, so just know that I knew that going in. What? I said. Maya has just figured something out, and it's going to make you both very angry, they told me. I turned to Maya, and her eyes were wide, her mouth holding just a hint of tension, but I knew that look. So you, she said, and then, wow, you're right. She had clearly and suddenly gotten very mad. Can one of you two just explain what is going on right now? I said, getting scared. Carl, she said carefully, if you are so good at predicting things surrounding me and April, you must have known that someone was coming to that cabin in Vermont. I did. And if you can confound your brother's predictions, why didn't you do it then? Because I didn't want to. My heart dropped through the floor. What? I thought maybe I had heard that wrong. I turned to them. Explain yourself right now. The monkey looked back at me, their little face stony. You needed to know the extent of the danger. I did not know what my brother would do, but I knew he would send someone after you. I had to wait until the threat was clear. It was a dangerous risk, but there was no better way. You could have just hidden us, though. I stood up from the couch and turned to look at them. Carl followed suit, standing up on the couch to take the full force of my emotions. I could have protected you, but it would have doomed your system. Fuck the system, I said. You said it was a risk. You can predict the future. How likely was it that Maya didn't leave that cabin alive? In roughly 4% of simulations, Maya died, Carl said. I leaned over Carl, feeling lightheaded as embers flicked the inside of my mind. Slowly, I said, what gives you that right? Carl responded immediately, their amber eyes hard but sad. Only that I have the ability. What? I had been expecting Carl to defend himself. Power is just a lack of constraint. I didn't understand what they were saying. Maybe I was too angry, or maybe it was too abstract. But then I heard Maya's voice. I had almost forgotten she was there. Carl's right. That's what power is. It's just ability and desire without restriction. What restriction does Carl have, aside from their random rules and the laws of physics? They have the power because they have the power. That's how power has always been. Leave, I said. I can't, Carl replied immediately. I know I have lost your friendship, and I've known it would happen for a long time. It hurts, but pain is just part of what it is to be me now. Regardless, I have to go with you to Altus. If I don't, you will both die. Suddenly and irrationally, a rage rose in me fast and bright. Maybe a flashback to my emotional hangover, and I thought I might hit them. But what would that achieve? Carl wasn't the monkey. The monkey was just a body they were in. April, Carl's voice was maddeningly calm. I hate the choices I have to make, but I have to make them because I'm the only one who can. I looked over to Maya for permission to flip out, but somehow her face showed a kind of acceptance. Maya, they almost killed you, I said, gesturing to the situation, hoping she would give me permission to let my guard down and have a true and terrible tantrum. April, and then she started crying. I looked down at my hands, one opaque, milky glass, and realized what I had been missing. Carl had almost killed me, too. What were the odds that I came out of that warehouse alive? Did I? Did this life even count? It was too much. I have to go. Maya, we have to go. We all have to go, Carl said. We're going to Altus now. Go pack. No, that's not what I mean. I mean I need to get away from you, I said, staring into their eyes. If you go alone, you'll both die. Carl lowered themselves from the couch and walked to their room. The door closed softly behind them. My phone buzzed on the couch. It was Andy.
Andy. Jason had come into my room and started kicking me. I'd been up all night watching the markets plunge and watching my altcoin explode. What the fuck, dude? I said once my headset was off, blinking in the light of the day. I had no idea what time it was. Fuck you, get up and come with me, he replied. I hadn't recorded an episode of Slainspotting in weeks. I hadn't even consumed a piece of media that wasn't either inside of Altus or about Altus for weeks. I knew I was letting him down. I knew I wasn't being healthy, and that he wasn't sure whether to be more furious or worried. But I was convinced that I needed to know everything about Altus to be the leader I needed to be in the coming revolution, whenever that was going to be. Little did I know, it would be tomorrow. But I knew fighting Jason was no use. His jaw was fixed and his eyes were hard. Also, I needed to go for a walk. My body was aching. So I got up and followed Jason out of the apartment, down the elevator, and onto our street, which was deserted. Into a coffee shop. We each got an Americano and sat down. Look around at the people in here. Tell me what you see. There aren't very many people in here, I responded. It's 10 a.m. Does that seem strange to you? I never knew what time it was anymore, so Jason was right that he had to tell me. The place was usually packed at this time of day. I spent more time looking at each of the people in the coffee shop. We're the only guys in here except for the guy in the back who looks like he's been hit by a train. Jason was silent, but his eyebrows went up in a gesture I interpreted as, and? Oh, is that what I look like? Yeah, that guy is an obvious Altus hound, and so are you. You've all got the same look, and it isn't a good one. I rubbed my chin, which was past prickly and into hairy. I'd been trying to keep presentable for the TV cameras, but I hadn't had any interviews in the last few days, and traditional news was feeling more and more irrelevant to me anyway. Why is it just women in here? Oh, I don't know. Have you ever noticed how the Altus space is largely about intellectual debate and self-improvement and porn? Jesus, dude, you're supposed to be an expert on this stuff. Have you never noticed who your audience is? Of course I had. I'd even seen think pieces talking about how Altus was built by men, for men, and how it was a weakness of the company. But talking about that wasn't good for what I was trying to do, so I hadn't put a lot of thought toward it. I groggily sipped my coffee, feeling the pit opening inside me. Jason didn't know the plan. I was only setting myself up to be a leader in the space, so I would be credible when I turned my back on it. And I'd do that as soon as it was the right time. Except that the right time seemed further away every day. And every day I felt a little more like the space was the next step forward in human consciousness. Yeah, sure, I looked sallow and unkempt. And yes, Altus was being run the wrong way. But still, it was so powerful. And I was a part of that. A part of something so big it was crashing the world economy and making me disgustingly rich. Even while I sat there with Jason, my mind wanted to go grab my headset. I didn't even know what I would do once I was there. I just wanted it. The space actually could make humanity better, of that I had no doubt. The way it was being run, Jason was right. It was mostly a bunch of dudes making stuff that mostly appealed to a bunch of dudes, and Altus had set it up so that they would be making money from every angle possible. Everyone who had access was taking their first crack at a sandbox or an experience and spending all of the rest of their time mining Altcoin so they could buy more. Altus was now worth hundreds of billions of dollars. But that day, there was a 20% stock market drop. Trillions of dollars of value lost. If no one wanted or needed to buy things, if all of the best human experiences were inside the Altus space, what was the economy even for? Can't you see that Altus is just bad? I found myself wishing I could experience Jason's brain to know where that sentence had come from. It's not good or bad, I said. It's just another tool. We just have to do the right things with it. And who's going to decide who does the right things? Peter Petrowicki? I looked at him for a long few seconds and then said, yeah, fuck you, man. And I stood up and walked out of the coffee shop and back up to my room. There was a padded envelope on my bed. I stared at it for a long time and then finally opened it. The Book of Good Times. I threw it straight into the wall, screaming. But then it just sat there on my floor, open, showing words that I knew I was going to read eventually. So I went over to it and read. A part of you is wondering if I made you colossally wealthy just so you would know that being colossally wealthy will not make you happy. But no, that is only a side effect. It's only made you more miserable, of course, which is also not what I want. I want you to be happy, and there's a good chance that you will be, though it will cost you. I'm trying to change something in this world, and it's going to take a lot of money. I had had hundreds of millions of dollars when Carl told me to convert everything to Altcoin. In the time since then, the value of Altcoin had increased 1,000%. So while my wealth was just numbers on a screen, if I cashed it out today, I would have $5 billion. I was a real, live billionaire now. I know it's been a bad day, but I guess the thing I most need to tell you is that you're on the right path, and you've nearly walked the entire thing. You may be wondering when the time is to act, but when you realize it, you will not be unsure. You will know exactly when you need to act. So if you aren't sure, it isn't time. It will be time soon. Also, don't be a jerk to your friends. You need them. Fuck you, Carl, I thought to myself. What the hell right did they have to tell me how to treat my friends? My sleep schedule was so messed up by the space. I always felt rested and I always felt groggy. No one thought it was healthy to spend 20 hours a day inside Altus, but no one had definitely died of it. Sure, people had died, but people died in the real world, too. There just hadn't been time to do any research on the actual effects before Altus launched. The point was, I hadn't actually slept in weeks, and I wanted to know if I could still do it. I lay down on my bed, prepared for hours of insomnia-fueled brain ramblings, but actually, I was unconscious in minutes. And then I slept from like 10:30 in the morning till 9 at night, because that's healthy, right? My default upon waking was to just reach for the headset, but that felt wrong. Jason's words had stuck in me like splinters. He didn't know what I was doing. April and Maya and Miranda and the thread and I were all doing something together, something big. And I couldn't tell him, so of course he was mad. But still, shouldn't he trust me? I thought about the thread and the video we were working on about inequality and Altus. I thought about Maya and April up in their tower barely tweeting anything at all. And then I thought about Miranda, all alone, working at Altus headquarters. God, Miranda. We hadn't heard from her in over a month now. She hadn't even sent a "don't worry about me, I'm fine" message. And then I started to feel ill because I honestly hadn't really been thinking about her much. She was down there in Valverde, taking risks for us all, and I'd just spaced on her. Panic boiled up in me. Was she okay? How could I help her? We'd gone way too long without hearing anything from her at all. Where would she hide something? I thought to myself. If Miranda wanted to talk with me, where would she go? I grabbed my headset and entered Altus space, opened the search dialog and inputted the most Miranda thing I could think of. Lab. There were a few results where you could play with a dog, which sounded lovely. But five results down, a result said, chemistry lab. It was part of a broader sandbox that was pretty unpopular. A really well-constructed school. Not knowing what I would be looking for, I entered chemistry lab and started to move through the room. It was a chemistry lab. It had all of the normal chemistry lab stuff. There were lab benches and beakers. Each bench had a sink in it, and there was a periodic table on one wall and, at the front of the room, a blackboard with a few chemical equations written on it. It was all very carefully done. Would this be the place Miranda would use to try and communicate with me? Was there anything stopping her? Did everything get inspected on the way out? She said that they were extremely careful, but it was worth a try, right? I opened every drawer, looked under every lab bench, and found nothing but crisp, unmarked surfaces. The room wasn't just new, it was Altus new. That feeling of everything being just a little too perfect, a little too crisp, not a speck of dust anywhere. There was another thing that was a little off, but was common in the space. There were no books. Writing had to be inputted manually when constructing sandboxes, so when there was writing, it was usually just a few lines. Except that periodic table was a doozy. Every box was filled in not just with the element's symbol, but also its name and its atomic weight. Someone had spent a lot of time on that table, maybe as much time as they spent on the entire rest of the room. I walked over to that poster with my heart in my teeth. I held my hand out, tracing the boxes, looking for the one I wanted. It took too long, but there, at the way, way bottom, americium. I got close, inspecting the little square. I traced it with my finger. It looked normal, like nothing at all special. I pushed on it, and it pushed back into the wall. I let go, and it popped out. Inside, there was a small piece of paper. Hello. Don't freak out too much. I've been imprisoned in Valverde. I'm in the high security area, which is outside of the main campus. It's a big cinder block building with no windows and an armed guard. I've been trapped inside the Altus space for, I think, weeks now. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It is very bad to be trapped inside your own mind. Making this for you has been the only thing keeping me sane. The thing that's scaring me the most, honestly, is that I have no idea how I'm eating food or going to the bathroom. What are they doing with my body? This isn't okay. And I don't think I'm the only one. I think a lot of people from Valverde have agreed to be in this prison, but that doesn't make it less of a prison. Maybe if the rest of the world knows about this, it would hurt them. Please come as soon as you get this. I'm afraid of what they'll do if they find out I've tried this. If they'll do this, what else will they do? Just hurry, okay? I'm sorry I'm such a mess. Miranda. How long ago had she left that message? Every day that I'd been defending Altus, enjoying the space, feeling powerful and loving my addiction, had been a day when Miranda had been trapped. I didn't want to confront the real reason I was so disgusted with myself. I had started to think maybe Peter was okay. I mean, he was bad, obviously, but not evil. But this was evil. I had sent Miranda to Altus, and then I had just forgotten about her. Is that the kind of friend I was? The kind of person I was? I exited the space, tore off my headset, and found Jason and Bex sitting in my room. Jason was leaning on my desk. Bex was in the desk chair. Andy, Jason said, standing up. Hey, guys, I said, anxious. We need to talk about some stuff, Bex said to me. I had thought maybe I wasn't ever going to see her again. I'm really sorry, I'm sure this is important, but it has to wait. I moved to grab my phone from my nightstand, but Jason beat me to it. Why don't you tell us what's going on? Jason said. Give me my fucking phone. He didn't give me my phone. Andy, we need to talk about how you're handling the world. You haven't been outside in days. Ever since April came back, you've been unhealthy, and we're worried about you. Look, guys, your hearts are absolutely in the right place, but you don't know what's going on here. This is the only moment when I can't handle this. Give me my phone and leave, right now. Bex stood up from the desk chair. You're totally right, Andy. We don't know what's going on. Why don't you help us? Why don't you help us understand? Can't you just trust me? I said. Jason and Bex looked at each other. No, Jason said finally. No, I think we could have a while back, but you can't see you from our eyes. People are dying in the space, Andy, and we've been tracking you. You're in there so much more than is healthy. Tell us, Bex said. Just tell us what's going on. I thought about it and realized it would be faster, and it would all be public soon anyway, so who cared? April, Maya, Robin, Miranda, and I have been plotting to take down Altus. We don't know exactly how, but we've been waiting for the right moment. I think the right moment is now. I just got a message from Miranda that she's been kidnapped by Altus and we need to get her out. As I told them this, I could see them glancing back and forth at each other. Did they believe me? You're planning on taking Altus down? What does that mean? Jason asked. Like, we want to take control of the technology or just eliminate it altogether. But, Bex said, you love it. That doesn't mean it's not evil. Look, I don't actually want to destroy it, but that would be better than leaving it in the hands of these people. So, said Bex, how the hell are you going to do that? Well, I said, and then I realized that, of course, I had no idea. Well, we're going to Valverde. We're going to document what's going on there and then show the world. Do you think that's going to stop Altus? Bex asked. I thought about it. I thought about how addictive, how important and powerful the space was. And then I thought about how no one seemed to have any control over them, except people who would lose billions of dollars if Altus stopped growing. The space is a superpower, and one that people worked their asses off to get. Even now, as I was telling myself that I wouldn't ever use Altus again, another part of me was saying, okay, but keep your options open. But maybe if we hit Altus hard enough, the company will break. Maybe the value of the company will drop and the investors will get spooked or something. I said, winging it. Bex exhaled an annoyed laugh.
No, Altus seems to make even good people make terrible decisions.
I had to look away as she said it.
And besides, they're too valuable. We could show the world how awful they are, but the board would just kick out the sea-level management, or, in the best case for us, they'd sell to someone else who would reopen a new space in a matter of months. The investors have put in billions. We won't be able to get them to give it up by hurting Altus.
Jason and I looked at each other.
Don't look so shocked. Do you guys think I'm majoring in sandwiches?
What are you majoring in? Jason asked. Also, how have I never asked you that? I added.
Finance, and you'll have to examine that question for yourself, she said to me.
Private equity, I said.
Yes, well, venture capital, more specifically,
Beck said.
Though I'm sure some private equity firms are involved.
No, private equity. Bex, I have an idea. I need you to tell me how idiotic it is. We call this guy. I went to my desk and dug through a drawer until I found the card from the private equity manager I had talked to in Cannes. We tell him we know that Altus is about to fail catastrophically, and we want to buy the company when investors start feeling the pressure to abandon it. That guy figures out how exactly all that works while April and Maya send the thread a bunch of footage of how Altus has kidnapped and imprisoned people inside the Altus space. The thread publishes that video and then shares the names of each one of those investors along with email addresses so that people can tell them to sell their shares of Altus stock. Then we buy Altus. I was pretty fucking proud of this plan, honestly.
That is an idiotic idea, she said. There's no way you have enough money to buy Altus.
I have $5 billion, I said.
Oh, she replied. And then, no, you don't.
Jason was just staring at me with his open mouth. Probably more than that now.
You do not have $5 billion, Beck said.
I know it's strange, but I invested. Wisely, I guess.
The book, she said.
What?
The book.
The book? What are you two talking about? Jason pitched in. Bex jammed her hand into her purse and pulled out a book.
This book can predict the future. It told me you're going to ask me to go to fucking Stomp. It told me to play piano more and gave me some stock tips and said that you were going to be a dick to me, but that I had to come here today anyway.
Wait, how long have you been getting these?
Oh, since a couple of weeks before we met, she said sheepishly.
What?
But that first day, I asked if the book looked familiar. I lied, she said, drawing out the word. The book was really specific and helpful, and I was scared to mess it up.
So you've been making money too? I asked, realizing that there was a chance that there were more people like Bex out there with a lot of new money.
Yes, but not $5 billion. And it's not just that. The fact that it was good at picking stocks made me trust it, and every time I took the book's advice, I was happier. So I started taking it more. I felt better. I saw my family more. I was a better friend. The book helped me ask for help when I needed it. It helped me help you when you needed it. I listened to more music. I played piano more.
This was very roughly true of me as well. The book hadn't made me happier, but that was an uphill battle considering the circumstances.
So you have $5 billion, she said.
I don't know why I'd assumed that the books were only for our little crew. Seeing one in Bex's hands made my head spin. I wondered if I should tell her that it was Carl who had been sending them, but I didn't get a chance.
It probably still isn't enough, she said.
What? Jason and I said together.
$5 billion is like 1% of their most recent valuation. We need to hurt them bad enough that investors will take a 99% bath.
And proving that they've invested in a company that is literally kidnapping and imprisoning people won't do that? She thought about this for maybe 1 second before saying,
No. I mean, probably not. I don't see what else we can do, but I think they'll find a way to squeeze more than a measly $5 billion out of it, even if we do make them look like trash for having invested in the first place, but...
And here she did pause to think.
Investors are irrational. They're just people. We have to scare them. We have to make them think it's going to zero. I think maybe the thread can do that. How?
I don't know, I said. But I had confidence they could. They were clearly looking for a good story about Altus. It was becoming the only story, and everyone wanted to talk about it. It had to be about more than how bad they were. It had to be about how they weren't going to be able to make money anymore. And then Jason had a good idea.
You should call April.
I was about to before you stole my phone, you dick.
Former Airbnb executive launches Altus-specific housing across Silicon Valley. TechCrunch. Among the droves of Altus-related startups popping up every single day, occasionally we find one that completely blows our minds. Jeremy Oh, former CTO of Airbnb, today announced a new startup called Gateway that is buying and remodeling homes to be used specifically by people who are spending the majority of their time inside of the Altus space. Individual homes are being subdivided to house up to 25 people. The living and sleeping space is tiny, but rents are too. Meals are prepared by a live-in maid, and bathroom and workout breaks are pre-scheduled so that roommates don't overlap. This isn't meant to be a long-term living situation, Mr. Oh told TechCrunch. It's for people who are looking to save a little cash while they build up their altcoin. Dystopian shit? Maybe. But also, who needs a house anymore anyway?
April. I placed the phone on the couch between me and Maya and answered Andy's call. What is it? Miranda's in trouble. He sounded jittery, excited or scared. She left a message inside the Altus space. He told us the gist of the message. Jesus Christ, I said, thinking about Miranda with all of her life and energy locked away and unable to move her own body was crushing. Carl just told us we need to go to Altus now, but I have no idea what to do when we get there. I looked up at Maya, who was looking at me like we were living inside a nightmare, but I was ready to take any chance to get out of this damned apartment. We have a plan, Andy said. Who is we? Maya asked. Me, Jason, and Bex. You don't know Bex. And we trust all of these people? Maya continued the cross-examination. If you can trust me, you can trust them. It's a long story, but we think this will work. Andy explained about his money and the plan to scare Altus's investors so much that they would sell enough of the company that we could control it. But we don't know if it's enough money, Bex added. We either need more or we need something that convinces everyone that Altus is actually worthless. More money then, Andy said, knowing the power of Altus too well. I don't have anything like $1 billion, I said. Do we know anyone who does? No one said anything, so Andy continued. You need to go to Valverde and rescue Miranda. We're staying here. We have a lot of phone calls to make. As soon as you can get access to the internet there, you need to send us every scrap of dirt you can find on Altus. I love this, Andy, Maya said, except we have no idea how to infiltrate a secret Caribbean supervillain's lair. Carl appeared, slinking out of the hallway and pulling a child's backpack onto their back, and said, I do. After we hung up with Andy, and as Maya and I were trying to figure out how exactly one dressed for this kind of thing, Carl again popped his head in. Maya, Carl said, I need to talk to you alone. That was weird, but the balance of power had shifted to Carl. They were the only thing keeping us safe. I waited in the living room while they talked, and when they emerged, I could tell that Maya had been crying. Is everything okay? I said, a little panicked. Yeah, they were good tears, but I can't tell you. I'm sorry. And then she grabbed my gaze with an unforgettable look and said, We have to make this happen, April. We have to. Our pilots were waiting for us when we got to Teterboro. Ms. May, one of them said, we'll be flying you straight to Valverde. We've been briefed. By who? Maya asked incredulously. The pilot winked at us and then said, Technically, we cannot land at the private airstrip in Valverde without notifying them of our flight plan. We are going to do that anyway. Wait, this is weird. You need to tell us what's going on. Maya pushed. Let's just say that we're both very grateful to a little book. He gestured to the co-pilot. Both of us have had a string of luck, and it hasn't led us wrong yet. We didn't need to wait in any security lines, and we didn't need to put a monkey through an X-ray machine. The pilots didn't even seem to care that there was a monkey. Maybe the book had told them that Carl was potty trained. When we were alone in the cabin and getting ready to take off, I asked Maya, "How many people do you think have been getting these books?" "Only a few dozen," Carl said, overhearing me. "It takes resources to know exactly where to place them and how they will affect people. Little nudges here and there can have large effects." I didn't want to talk to Carl, so I ignored them. Maya turned to me. "Is this definitely the best way to do this?" "I have no idea. I kinda expected us to be sneaking in through the jungle or something. Landing a plane in the middle of their secret base doesn't seem very stealthy, even if it is in the middle of the night."
"We'll figure it out," Carl said.
"Is that honestly the best you can do, you shitty sentient monkey?" I said, not as a joke. I was trying to be mean. "This is what has to happen. You are the only thing my brother cannot predict. And the Altus campus is the only thing I cannot predict. Only in bringing these two things together does the future become completely unpredictable." The plane began to surge forward, and it got loud in the cabin, making it hard to keep the discussion going. I didn't want to talk to Carl, and their hearing was too good for them to not be inside of every conversation, so mostly Maya and I traveled in silence, each of us looking out our windows, wondering how in the world our lives had ended up this way. I think that happiness is very important, but I will also say that the most effective people I know are not the happiest, and there is something to be said for effectiveness. Even if we were managing a team of nearly 100,000 volunteer social media users, living with my girlfriend and my monkey, watching Netflix, having breakfast, and taking care of a single lovingly spoiled potato plant was pretty fucking relaxing. But I think there's something inside of us, something at the seed level, something that blooms in us in adolescence and never leaves. And it's just want. Some people have more of it than others. But I think we all have it. And the most amazing tool that I think anyone in the world can have is the ability to control and direct that want. Some people work to minimize it with mindfulness and meditation. Some people let it grow and run free and take over their lives. But some people, and I consider myself one of them, study their want, refine it, and build an engine that burns it. Even if their want pushes all in one direction, they can tack against it like a sailboat, getting somewhere better than where they wanted to be. I know my want. I know that big well inside of me is never going to get filled. I know that life is not about actually satisfying the want. It's about using it. In that moment, all of my wants were pushing me to Valverde. I wanted to make Maya proud of me. I wanted to be important. I wanted all of this to be worth something. I wanted to save the world. And I wanted to have saved the world. I wanted to find some end to all of this. And I wanted life to be normal again. Maybe if we could take down Altus, we could have all of that. People would remain free to continue the beautifully stupid endeavor of humanity. And I would just be a person again. Well, maybe not just a person, but close enough anyway. The point is, if you want to be happy, let go of your wants. If you want to be effective, harness them. I think either strategy is okay, but I've made my choice. Sorry, Mom. I think I figured it out, I said to Maya, knowing Carl would hear me. What? Maya asked. Where the money is going to come from?
The billions of dollars?
Maya asked.
Yeah.
And then I told her. She looked back at me with a slight curl of disgust in her lip.
I mean, if that works, then I guess it was all worth it.
Andy. It was time. I went on the Altus exchange and started selling Altcoin for cash. I couldn't do it all at once because there simply weren't enough people buying. Every time I sold a hunk, the price would drop. But eventually, a few $1 million at a time, it all flowed out of my account and, instead of cryptocurrency, my bank account had billions of actual dollars in it. I apologize for interrupting a fairly intense moment with a bunch of stuff about fucking finance, but it's important. Remember Stuart Patrick, the guy who ran the private equity conference in Cannes and who gave me his business card? Well, I'd looked him up and guess what? He was born before Star Trek The Next Generation came out, so he probably wasn't named after Patrick Stewart. It was the kind of lie that really didn't matter, except it let you know that a guy didn't mind lying for no reason. I called him at 7 o'clock at night, assuming I would leave a message, but he answered his phone. I'm sorry for calling so late, I said, surprised and unprepared. Who is this? He sounded a little agitated. It's Andy Skampt. We met in Cannes. You told me to call you if I knew anything that might be useful. Oh, well, in that case, hold on a moment. I heard him talking to someone in the background. Andy, you have my attention. Not long into the conversation, I felt way out of my depth, and I handed the phone to Bex. They had been talking for a solid 30 minutes when they finally got to the point. I'm going to have to ask you to stop talking about this like you're saving the world, Stuart told us, exasperated. I don't know any of what you know. And also, I don't care. The only thing I'm worried about is whether there's money to be made here. If there's a transaction that is going to occur, I can charge you for that. If it's a large transaction, I will make a lot of money. If you know that the value of Altus is going to plunge, that's all that matters. We put together a trade. I call every single person invested in Altus. I scare the shit out of them. And then, when the bad thing happens, you buy the stock when they're willing to sell at a low price. I don't care why we're doing it. It's great if it's a good cause, but if there's money for me to make, why are you trying to convince me it's good? Who cares? I'll do it. Jason, Bex, and I looked at each other. I mean, I guess he was right. If you're going to pay someone a bunch of money, you don't also need to convince them that it's the right thing to do. And how much money do you have to buy Altus shares? He asked. Right now? Like 5 billion? That's not enough, Stuart said. We think we can get more together soon. Very soon? Very soon. We hung up, and then Bex turned to me and said, I think we're doing this right. I'm glad. I've never done a hostile takeover. No, I mean the whole thing. Because a book told me to give you this after an important conversation about buying a company. I looked down. She was holding out a book to me. God damn it, Carl, I said under my breath, and then began to read it out loud. This is the last time I'll be in touch. After today, I will no longer be able to communicate with you. I hope you have learned things from our correspondence. I also want to say, of all people I have communicated with in this way, you have had the worst time. I wanted to make people's lives better while I did this, but yours has gotten worse. This is a function of our working together toward a particular outcome. So I'm sorry this has been a rough time. Remember that music brings you joy, that making a podcast with Jason brings you joy, that playing games with friends brings you joy. You will always struggle with not feeling productive until you accept that your own joy can be something you produce. It is not the only thing you will make, nor should it be, but it is something valuable and beautiful. The last round of fundraising Altus did valued the company at over $500 billion. But we didn't need to buy all of Altus. We needed to buy over 50%, so we just needed to convince a few very, very rich people that they were holding on to a deeply toxic asset, and they would be lucky to get even 2% of their money back. Anyhow, now that that's all explained, we can return you to your regularly scheduled climax.
Maya. The co-pilot walked into the cabin after our ears started popping with the descent and said, We're coming in on final approach. We don't really know what's going to happen when we land, so be ready, I guess. We had talked through a bit of the plan and at least knew what we were each going to do once we were on the ground. April, when we land, you may notice a difference in your ability, Carl said. I severed the node that connected me to Altus, which means that you will not be able to reach into the network. I'm going to begin rebuilding that network from the inside when we land, but it will take time. You should notice it if and when you reconnect. I'm already disconnecting, I think, April said. It's like I'm trying to grab something, but my hand is passing through it. Are you okay? I asked. Yeah, she said, without turning to look at me. I'm fine. We landed uneventfully, and as we taxied down the runway, Carl and I went to the back of the plane and, well, we hid in the bathroom. I sat on the toilet. They lounged in the sink. I always expected Carl to smell like an animal, but they actually mostly smelled just like April because they used her shampoo. The moment the co-pilot brought down the door, we could hear someone yelling. What the fuck are you thinking? You can't just land a plane without tower confirmation or filing a flight plan. Good luck holding on to your license after this. It was time to start the plan. I peeked out of my position in the bathroom as April walked to the front of the plane and then down the stairs. This seems fine, I said to myself. Yes, Carl said, ignoring my sarcasm. So far, all according to plan. As April stepped down the stairs and into the light from the tiny terminal building, the guy stopped yelling, though I couldn't hear what he was saying. I sat in my thoughts, staring into space, trying to keep my breathing steady. And then I finally asked Carl, when do we go? We just need to make sure that no one will see us when we leave the plane. How long will that take? About 10 minutes. How long have we been waiting? 8. It had felt like an hour. And then what? And then we take out the cell phone jammers. And then we go get Miranda. And then we try and explain to the world how bad these people are, and hopefully the price goes down low enough for us to buy it. How likely is that? I asked. I haven't run the simulations, Carl said. What? This seemed like an oversight. Maya, this is it. This is the last chance. Altus is a black box to me, so any simulation I ran would have a very wide margin of error. But more than that, they sat up in the sink. It doesn't matter what the odds are. This is our last chance, and if I knew that the odds were very low, it would further decrease the odds. So I haven't looked. You're really weird. Oh, well, it's time to go anyway, they said calmly. It was warm, but I still felt myself shivering as anxiety battled with drowsiness. None of us had slept on the plane, and that had been a mistake. I followed Carl, not into the little airport, but directly into the forest that surrounded the compound. Carl, of course, moved effortlessly through the mess of undergrowth, while I stumbled along, every step sounding like thunder, my black hoodie getting caught on every branch it could. Seems like you'd be comfortable here, I said, thinking maybe it was a joke, but really just wanting to say something. It is nice, actually. You keep the apartment too cool for me. You never said anything, I said, somehow feeling defensive. I didn't feel like it would be well received, they said, hanging in front of me. Are there any other monkeys like you here? No. The only extant Caribbean monkeys arrived from Africa on slave ships, and there are none on Valverde. Are you reconnected to your network, then? Oh, yes. If I was not connected to the network, I would not be able to control the monkey. I have kept the bandwidth very low in the hopes that my sibling will not notice. Ah, here we are. Ahead of us was some kind of electrical transfer station that was surrounded by a 12-foot-high painted block wall. The monkey ran at it and tried to scramble up the wall, but the painted cinder block was too slick. I'm going to need you to throw me up there, they said. Like, pick you up and toss you? I asked, incredulous. Yes. I weigh around 10 pounds. I grabbed under their fuzzy armpits and arranged them so that one hand was under the monkey's butt. They were surprisingly light. A stringy, bony affair, awkward in my arms. You're not great at this. The voice was loud and quite close to my ear, making it clearer than usual that it came from the smartwatch around their neck. Geez, it's my first time, okay? Here. They positioned themselves so that one of their feet was gripping each of my hands. The monkey's big toes were like thumbs, and they squeezed my hands. One, they began counting. Two, three. On three, I flung my hands upward while their legs pushed off. My ribs creaked where my chest was still healing as I pushed. But the combined force of the two of us and the boost of my height was enough that their little hands had no problem gripping the lip of the wall. They pulled their body up and stood on the wall and then looked down at me. Maya, I'm going to drop in here and disable the cell phone jammer. Once I do that, I'll be trapped inside. I interrupted, trying not to yell. What? The only thing worse than doing this with Carl, I realized, was doing it alone. You'll need to go get Miranda in the high security wing. It's back toward the airport. You remember how to get there. We had gone through the plan, but Carl hadn't told me we wouldn't be there together. How the hell am I supposed to get past an armed guard? I'll take care of that for you. Once I do, just wave your phone over the keypad and then enter the code. You remember the code? 839201, I said. How do we get you out of there? I'll make my own way out eventually. It will just, they hesitated, take some time. This body wasn't going to be useful to you anyway. Do not think of me as being in one place. I will be with you. Okay, I should have it disabled within the next 5 minutes or so, they said. And then the monkey disappeared over the other side of the wall, and I was on my own. And so, I went back into the woods and dragged myself through the leafy, dense undergrowth, trying not to trip and fall every 6 feet. I was not trained for this. I felt like my pants were full of bugs, and in my defense, the number of bugs in my pants wasn't zero. Before that day, I had spent just as much time in jungles as I had in outer space. But I made it through. I had the giant cinder block building in sight after less than 10 minutes of walking. Something in me hoped that the guard by the door would be sleeping, or maybe just gone. But no, a man in military fatigues stood next to the door. In his arms, he held the kind of rifle people take to wars. Now was the time to just trust. I walked out of the woods and toward the building. What must it have looked like to that guy? This figure in a black hoodie and pants just stepping out of the forest. Hello, I said, if only to be polite, when I was still 30 or so feet away. Hello, he said, in a thick accent I didn't recognize. I need to go into this building.
Do not come any closer.
He reached for his belt, which held a walkie-talkie. I hadn't thought about walkie-talkies. I was much more worried about the big old gun. I stopped in my tracks, unsure what to do. He held the walkie-talkie to his mouth, and then, all at once, he crumpled.
Carl. I left a surprise at Altus. I am technically a benign infection, but if my parts do not communicate with each other, they stop being me. They do not have consciousness, but that does not mean that they disappear, or even that they stop infecting new cells. When I severed my connection to the parts of myself that were at Altus, that did not destroy them. They just stopped being me. And in the moment before I snipped that thread, I sent a signal for those bits of me to hide, to change shape, to go stealth, and then to infect everything they could. And I believed that they would go undetected by my sibling. I believed they would spread. I believed it because that was the only way we could succeed. If my sleeping network had been detected, it was all doomed anyway. But when that guard collapsed in front of Maya, I knew it had worked. That was a true test of signal strength to interrupt the consciousness of a man that my sibling had so completely infiltrated. Of course, it was like a beacon to him. I had hung a sign on Altus that said, "Under attack," and I could already feel his response rising.
April. I heard a man yelling as I walked to the front of the plane.
What the fuck are you thinking? You can't just land a plane without tower confirmation or filing a flight plan. Good luck holding onto your license after this.
But then, as my face was lit by the lights coming from the building, his frustration faded.
Jesus,
he said in a mix of awe and exasperation.
Come with me, I guess.
And so I left the plane alone. Once inside the tiny terminal, I sat for about 15 minutes before a group of 5 dudes came into the waiting area. One of them was Peter Petrowicki.
April! This is a surprise honor.
He stuck out his hand. I knew that this would happen, but that didn't mean that I was ready for it. I hadn't spent much time with anyone except my best friend since I got my new face, and now here was my arch nemesis in a crisp blue button-down and khaki pants, flanked by hired muscle, acting like nothing at all odd was going down. Peter, I said, and I reached out and grabbed his hand, smiling.
Normal, normal, normal.
Do you want to go have a chat? I'm sorry if you caught us a little off guard. It's the middle of the night. Yeah, that's my bad, I said, sounding cool, but feeling very small, very alone, and completely terrified. It just seemed suddenly urgent that I come visit you, I said. Well, let's get to a conference room and we can talk about it. But first, I hope you don't mind. We're all about secrecy here. Can you hand Davis your phone? He gestured to the biggest of his companions. They had clearly all hastily dressed, but nonetheless each had a jacket on that could very easily be concealing a gun. I handed my phone to Davis, thinking that this plan was terrible and that I hated everything about it. As he led me out of the hangar and through a courtyard toward a large building, Peter Petrowicki did what he did best. April, when I heard you had come back, I was... He paused for dramatic effect. I was just so relieved. The part I played in your story was not a kind one, and you owe me nothing. But I hope that you know I never wanted anything like that. And then he turned to me, gesturing vaguely at my body, small and overshadowed by the bulk of him and his companions. Like this to happen to you. We walked past a huge cinder block building with no windows. That, I knew, was where Miranda was being kept, and the thought of her made me stronger. It made it clear that this guy's talk was nothing more than the most distilled bullshit on the planet. That didn't stop him from spewing it, though. I felt deeply responsible for what happened to you. I still do. What a foolish campaign I was on. I was chasing the high, that was all. Now, what we're doing here? He gestured around at the giant, curving building we were approaching, is real change. You can't change the world on cable news. You actually have to do something. And we're doing something amazing. I was starting to realize that he was just giving me a modified version of a speech he'd given dozens of times before, possibly to every new high-level recruit that landed on the island. He opened the door for me, and as I walked through it, I felt the fear biting at the back of my throat as I said, "Yeah, and all you needed to do it was sell yourself to the space aliens that you got famous by despising." I saw a flash of anger in his eyes, but it was gone just as fast. He didn't say anything more until we were alone in the conference room. What do you know? All of the bullshit had suddenly been washed away. I realized that the flash I'd seen in his eyes wasn't anger. It was fear. He was afraid I knew something, but what? And it came to me. When I'd said that he sold out to the aliens, I meant that he'd been using the changes in our brains Carl created to make Altus work. But it was more than that. How long have you been working for him?
For who?
He sounded completely confident in his denial, You didn't do this. You never could have. Maybe you're able to pretend that some benevolent scientist is feeding you all of these systems to make Altus work. I'm sure you've had to do a ton of work to make it look like you're doing work. But you have to know who actually did it. We have some of the best minds in the world at Altus. We're not just messing about. We built this. Okay, sure, except I saw your eyes. I stood up from the table. You know who you really work for. You're just being moved around on the board like the rest of us. Just like Carl found me and made me their game piece, something else found you. I don't care about you. You're just the human face. And then I kept talking as I worked things out. Actually, you know what? I do care. I just hate that I care. I care that you would say whatever it took to get on TV, because that means you didn't hurt me and the world for something you actually believed. You only believed it because it would get you attention. He opened his mouth to talk, but I just kept going, leaning over the table toward him. I guess maybe that was true of me too, so maybe that's why I hate you so much. Because you and I are the same thing. I think I'm better, but who knows, maybe I'm not. Maybe you really have convinced yourself that you're some Alexander the Great, ushering in change, and the role you play is actually important. But that's always been a lie. There are no great men, only moments when power is unleashed, and then dicks like you turn theft and murder from taboos into tools. Really, you're just falling into the well of your own power. And for you, it isn't even your power, because you have no control anymore. You're just a variable to be manipulated, and you beg for it. You'll beg to be a pawn as long as you get to look like the king. Well, Peter said, trying to sound calm even though his face was flushed and he was gripping his hands to keep them from shaking. Now that you're done with your little outburst, why don't you tell me why you're here? I almost killed him. I don't mean I wanted to kill him. I mean, that comment made me so mad that I almost smacked him as hard as I could, which, with my new body, would probably have divided his head in half. Luckily for us both, I stopped myself. I'm worried about Miranda, I said instead. Well, I think you'll see her very soon. In fact, I imagine the two of you will be spending a lot of time together. What do you mean? I asked. And then I realized this wasn't part of the plan. I needed to stall him longer. I mean, what we are doing here is too important for anyone like you to stand in the way of it. You live a reclusive life now. And it seems that your pilots didn't even file a flight plan. You say I turn theft and murder into tools, but they always have been. His tone wasn't scary because he sounded evil. He sounded sad, like he didn't want to have to kill me. And that was more terrifying than any malice. I imagine it will be a fairly long time before anyone even notices you're gone. By then, it'll be too late. Altus doesn't exist in any country. The government of Valverde is very cooperative. Who is going to stop us? But then as he talked, I felt my mind suddenly grab a hold of the thing it had lost. It was like I had been locked into place on a roller coaster, but the car was free again. Carl had brought down whatever was blocking our ability to connect to Altus. I just love this, I said. What? Peter replied, looking unsettled. And then his look of concern deepened as the overhead speaker in the conference room started playing a creepy electric organ sustaining a minor chord. How massively you underestimated us, I said. You actually thought I came alone? You really thought I would make the same mistake again? The music crescendoed, and then static broke through and the organ dissolved into digital tones and distortion. I love it so goddamn much. Peter called out to his muscle in the hall. Get in here. They came into the room. And then I surrendered my body to Carl. Three drum hits came crashing through the overhead speakers. On the first beat, my fist slammed into one of the guard's ribs. I ducked under his counter on the second beat. And on the third, my legs straightened as my left fist reached high and fast into his jaw. I watched from inside my body as his head snapped back fast enough that I worried he might be seriously hurt. But it wasn't something I had done, just something I had watched myself do. Carl had spent time in my body. They had gotten to know it as they were repairing me. And now the full force of their processing power was dedicated to moving my body through space. I wanted to watch as the man slumped to the ground, but my eyes flicked instead to the two men who were rushing me from outside the room. Before I knew what was happening, I had flattened myself to the floor. One man missed me completely and crashed into the window behind me. I heard the safety glass tinkling down in a waterfall around him. The other guy had stumbled to a stop before me, but Carl's foreign strength coursed through me and I rocketed myself off the floor, my head connecting with the man's body, just at the base of his sternum. I felt it crack. He stumbled backward, gasping for breath. It was the man who had taken my phone. I stepped inside his guard and, like a trained thief, darted my hand into and out of his inside suit coat pocket. I found myself holding my phone as my legs swept under him. His feet went up and his head went down, knocking solidly into the hard, carpeted floor. The music was so loud I couldn't hear any of their grunts or groans. My eyes flicked to the doorway, and there I saw the only guard who was still standing reach under his jacket. I tried to shout over the music, but the music shouted back, the first words of the song. I turned to the side, and then the gun went off. Pop, over the sound of the music. I felt the bullet hit, and I staggered under the sharpness of the pain. I threw my phone and then ran toward the man. My phone got there first, knocking into the guy's head, distracting him before he got a second shot off. My left hand grabbed the gun. It went off again as I ripped it out of his hand and then threw it across the room. Then I bent back down and came up holding the phone. I looked down at it. 4 bars. Not just a signal, a strong signal. Maya and Carl had been doing good work. I turned around and didn't even have time to process what I saw before my body ducked and weaved to the side. The man I had sent through the window was back up, cut and bleeding, but now swinging a small bat at me. No matter what he did, it wouldn't connect. My body was just never in the space where the bat went, until my left arm shot out to block it. The bat splintered as it struck the arm, which then extended into the side of the guy's face. He grunted but stayed standing as I felt a hand wallop me on the side of the head. My senses spun, and Carl's control loosened with them, and I dropped to one knee. Seems like forever and a day, Electric Light Orchestra sang. They were standing on opposite sides of me, one bleeding and bruised, the other fresh, having just entered the fight, but both standing in professional stances. I couldn't even really see both of them at the same time. Then, as fast as I had lost it, Carl locked back on. Energy exploded in my legs and I twisted around, feeling the centrifugal forces tugging at my cheeks as I spun. My ankle cracked across the fresh guard's skull, pushing his head toward the ground as, somehow, my feet ended up back under me. The bloodied guard, I have to respect it, he stayed in the fight. As he lunged at me, I leapt straight into the air and tucked my knees up to my chest. His face crashed directly into my left knee. He fell backward, limp and unconscious. And then, like that, my body was mine again, and the music faded.
Jesus. Jesus Christ, I heard Peter's voice say.
I had forgotten in those moments that he was in the room.
Same, I said, breathing hard. That was wild.
My heart was thrumming. Whatever Carl had done hadn't bypassed my stress response.
He shot you,
Peter said, and I remembered that he was right. The bullet had hit under my left arm, but that entire half of my body was covered in the Carl stuff. I felt at it with my hand, and sure enough, the blazer I was wearing was in tatters under my armpit. The bullet must have shattered when it hit me, shredding the fabric.
I guess he did, I said.
And then I took out my phone and opened the camera.
Hello, I'm here at Altus, where a bunch of people just tried to kill me. I came here because a friend of mine, Miranda Beckwith,
got a job at Altus, but has for the last month completely ceased any communication with us. Until we found a note from her inside the Altus space saying that she's been imprisoned here. I have not yet found her, but I did find Peter Petrowicki. I turned the camera to him. Peter, why don't we have a little chat? On the record, while you take me to my friend. Might I remind you, we found you trespassing here at Altus and you assaulted several members of my staff just now. Oh, I said, turning the camera off. So that's how we're going to play this? I jumped over the conference table to where Carl had thrown the gun when they were inhabiting me. I picked it up off the floor and then jumped back over. Peter's eyes were wide, and every muscle in his body clenched when he saw I was holding the pistol. You're going to take me to Miranda, I said, crouching down beside him with the barrel of the gun in my left hand, because otherwise I will absolutely break every single one of your fingers. I squeezed the gun's barrel, and the metal groaned and snapped as it yielded to the power that Carl had given to me.
What are you?
Peter said, his voice quavering. Ugh, I said, standing up. I wish I knew.
Miranda. Altus had forgotten about me. They would let me work, but they also didn't care if I didn't. I had given up on getting a message out. I had given up on everything. I thought if I made it clear that I knew I was inside of the Altus space, that they would take me out. I assumed they were monitoring my heart rate at least, and that must have told them that I was in distress. But hours and days and weeks kept passing and nothing happened. I walked the halls of the building that they had constructed for me to exist inside of, and then I ran through them. And then I ran up the walls. I tore things from shelves. I screamed. But always, I knew I was just rearranging synapses in my mind and nothing more. I hadn't spoken to another person in how long? How would I even know? But the thing that kept me locked perpetually on the edge was that I knew my friends had not forgotten me. My mind had always wanted me to believe they weren't really my friends. But when faced with the question of whether they could abandon me to this, I found something solid. They couldn't. I believed that. Even if they didn't find my note, they would come for me eventually. And so I went into the Altus space inside my Altus space, and I tried things out. I looked to see what the most popular experiences and sandboxes were. And sometimes I was disappointed, but sometimes I found some freedom in them. I was trapped, and I had to fight constantly not to wonder what was being done with my body, but I put it out of my mind, and I waited. I had done the work, and I believed the gang would fight to free me. It would happen. And so it was that I was experiencing a young woman playing with a kitten in the Altus space when my eyes suddenly filled with the light of 10,000 suns.
What?
My mouth felt gummy, not like dry and sticky, but just weak and slow. As my eyes adjusted in front of me, I saw Maya's face. And as much as I knew it was always going to happen, the relief that slammed down into me was so heavy that I nearly broke under it. Oh God, I said, and I lunged forward at her. Not yet.